But what we're suggesting, and we can prove mathematically, that instead of storing that money in somebody else's bank, we store it in a high cash value whole life policy. It's not only liquid and safe, and many people could argue that it's safer than a bank, but it's going to earn a much higher rate of return. There's some level of asset protection, like in Texas, like many great states, the money inside your policy is completely asset protected if you were to get sued. So it has this the same thing that banks are doing, but there's more advantages of doing it.
Hello, hello. My name is Abel Pacheco, and you're listening to the Five Talents Podcast, how to build wealth like the 1%. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Five Talents Podcast, how to build wealth like the 1%. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. I'm the principal of Five Talents Capital. We're a San Antonio, Texas real estate investment firm, and we're actively invested in 1,500 doors of commercial real estate worth $150 million, much of which is right here in San Antonio, Texas, the Alamo City, baby. I'm also a fund manager, a capital allocator, and a servant leader who learned how to invest like the 1%. And on the Five Talents Podcast, I enjoy helping others learn and doing the same. So if you're seeking investment strategies to catapult your family wealth and generate passive income, even in today's volatile market, this show is for you. Because each week we're bringing you interviews with PE firms, investment advisors, financial planners, tax strategists, VC funds, and many others who are highly skilled in handling money, good stewards of capital, and individuals who advise the wealthiest 1% on what to do with their money. So each show, we're going to provide you insights and actionable steps that you can implement to become a better investor. You're always going to learn something that you can apply in your own investment journey on the Five Talents Podcast. We hope you enjoy the show. All right. Hello, hello. This is Abel Pacheco, your host for the Five Talents Podcast. We are super excited today. We have a couple of amazing guests with the Infinite Wealth team. We are here, Mr. Anthony and Cameron. If you haven't heard about Anthony and Cameron, I would tell you, go look into them, what they do and how they do it. We're going to ask a little bit more, but we're just going to cover that basic high-level surface of what they do. I think the concept is so amazing. That's why I had them on the show, because there's always this opportunity for us to, you know, learn more, educate ourselves more. What should we do with our money? How do we be good? How should we be good stewards of our time, our effort, our energy? One of those is literal our cash and liquidity and investment capital. And so Anthony Faso and Mr. Cameron Christensen are just a couple of great folks that I think are going to provide us with the education and an insight on how to be better stewards with our dollars. And, you know, just I'm excited to have them on. So let me first tell you guys, thank you. thanks for coming, gentlemen. Thank you.
Absolutely. We're happy to be here, Abel. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, if I can ask you in your own words, please introduce, you know, yourselves, who you are, what you do, and we'll just start a great conversation here.
I'm Anthony Faso. I like to say I'm a self-described recovering CPA. Been a CPA almost 30 years and had my own firm. Then I had heard about the infinite banking concept around 08 and 09 after the crash that really opened up my eyes. And so after reading that book, I slowly transitioned to practicing infinite banking myself and then eventually teaching it to my clients and then eventually sold my CPA firm and was doing IBC 100% of the time.
Wow, 30 years of a CPA background. So you have a little bit of insight that may help us.
And gray hair. Like when I say the 30 years, it makes me sound like I'm getting old, but
yeah,
I understand
the mindset.
Yeah.
If you can't see my video, it's like, I wish I had the hair. Plenty of gray on my chin right now. Yeah.
Well, I can't even grow that. I mean, but
it's awesome.
Well, my name is Cameron Christensen. My background is I was a small business owner out here in Las Vegas, and I was looking for retirement opportunities for myself. And to be honest, Abel, everything that I came across just did not make sense to me, right? The trademark of most retirement opportunities are you put money away, you can't touch it till you're 59 and a half. I was a young man when I kind of started looking at putting money somewhere. And even at that age, it did not make any sense to me whatsoever. And so I didn't do anything. I sat on cash for a very long time. And similar to Anthony, man, until I came across Nelson Nash's Become Your Own Banker, I didn't know quite what to do. And I read his book and I was absolutely blown away. And so I started implementing that personally and then also for my business as well. And so that's kind of how I started, even in this industry, was just sharing this idea with other business owners that I knew. And now here we are almost 15 years later. Anthony and I have been partners for 4 years and, you know, we've got a great practice and we've got to even have our own podcast.
Yeah, I love it. I'm excited to have you all on, bring a wealth of knowledge to, you know, our listener base. And from a listener base, we have a lot of real estate folks that want to buy more, want to do deals, whether they're syndicators or operators, a lot of commercial real estate folks, you know, they're trying to think about bigger deals and how to invest. And then we have a good amount of passive investors that are educating themselves and learning more about how we do it so that they can properly put their money in the right spot, right? So this concept of infinite banking, you know, when I heard it for the first time, I go, oh, that, you know, it's exactly what we need to be more educated on, because as we're saving, not to save, so to speak, but we're saving money so that we can eventually invest it. You know, I can't invest $500 at a time. I need to save, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 or more. And the time that it takes for me to put it in until I'm actually investing, you know, could be 3 months, could be six, could be a year longer. And that's where I really like infinite banking, you know, the mindset. So maybe you could just start there. When someone says infinite banking, like I just hear, oh, or become your own bank. That was the first time that I heard it. And I go, oh, the bank lends money and charges interest. I don't have money to lend. I can't become my own bank until, you know, so help us demystify the high level concept and just illuminate what this actually is.
You know, here, what I would say is before we start talking about the product, I think it's more important we talk about the process. And just like you mentioned, with a lot of, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, Abel, what makes us different? There's a lot of IBC great people out there. What distinguishes us is that we use our infinite banking to incorporate ideas we had read about in Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So we're not using infinite banking to buy liabilities, say finance cars or vacations, even though that does work, okay? But buying liabilities is not going to build real wealth. We need to buy assets. So that's how we started with infinite banking, is using it to pay off credit cards. But then when we realized we helped people pay off the credit cards, but we didn't solve the underlying problem, and they got back in debt again, right? So we transitioned to really people who wanted to take action, wanted a different life, and wanted to buy assets. So what we call this, the cash cycle for investors. Now, Abel, just like you mentioned, the numbers are going to be different for each person. But typically, let's say we want to buy a syndication, for example. Now, oftentimes those are, say, around 100 grand. Maybe there's some that are less, but whatever that number is or whatever that asset is, we typically have to save up money. Typically, it's systematically. We save it up until we have enough to buy the asset. But then what we do is we withdraw the money and buy the asset. But then that asset produces cash flow. So we got to put it back in the bank, right? And then maybe we use some for lifestyle. But typically, we want to buy more assets. So we let that account build up again, and then we buy asset two. And now we have the cash flow from asset one and two. It's got to go somewhere. You put it back in the bank. And we just have this virtual cycle, which I think most investors can relate and understand. With infinite banking, we don't want to change what you're doing. We just want to change slightly how you're doing it. And we'd still want you to buy those assets, to buy that syndication. But what we're suggesting, and we can prove mathematically, that instead of storing that money in somebody else's bank, which typically people are going to use a bank because they need money that's safe and liquid. So when that opportunity comes, they can execute. All we're saying is if we store that money instead of somebody else's bank, we store it in a high cash value whole life policy. It's not only liquid and safe, and many people could argue that it's safer than a bank, but it's going to earn a much higher rate of return. There's some level of asset protection, like in Texas, like many great states, the money inside your policy is completely asset protected if you were to get sued. So it has this the same thing that banks are doing, but there's more advantages of doing it. And so all we're saying, instead of storing the money at a bank, we store that money inside a whole life policy. That's really the cusp. But oftentimes it's easy to get down rabbit holes and to go into some of the details. But at the bottom line, all we're really saying is you got to store your capital somewhere. And there's many advantages to store it inside a whole life policy versus a bank.
All right. Well, that kind of makes sense, right? So the cycle that you mentioned is very clear for, I think, a lot of us. Save up some money. I got 50, I got 100K, I'm going to put it in. But man, when that cash flow comes back, you see it hit the account. And I'm trying not to spend this $1,500 at a time, $2,000 at a time, $800 at a time, because I need it to build back up. So this is a process of which I can see it. It literally just comes and puts it back up. So I'm my own bank, essentially.
Yeah. And Abel, so there's a couple. One of the biggest attributes or what makes this different than using a bank, when we use a bank, we withdraw the money and we break the compound interest curve, right? We stop earning interest on that money. Now, Abel, at what point do you want your money to stop compounding?
I don't.
Okay. Good question. Good question, right? But yeah. The problem is, Abel, I'm kind of throwing you all in the loop, but everybody who's using a bank, we're breaking that compound interest curve every time.
Where I want it to break down is when I borrow from the bank. I don't want them to hit me with compounding interest. What I want to do is put it somewhere where I can continue to earn compounding interest, right?
Exactly. Because when we store the money in this policy, we have two options to access it. One, we could withdraw it just like we do at a bank, but then we're breaking the compound interest curve. But what makes this asset unique is we can borrow against it. So you have your 100 grand in, and then we take a policy loan and borrow against that and buy the asset. Your 100 grand is still there. Your 100 grand is still compounding income tax free this whole time while you are using it. That's why oftentimes we will relate to this like using a rewards credit card, right? Abel, do you use a rewards credit card?
I do.
Well, why don't you just pay cash? Why do you add that extra step?
Because I want some airplane flight miles.
Yeah, you want some extra bonuses, right? I'm going to buy this thing anyways. By adding one extra step, the credit card, we get some extra miles. If you can understand that, Abel, you can understand infinite banking. Because all we're saying is we consider our policies, our rewards credit card for our investments. I wish I could buy a syndication with my credit card, okay? But I can't. But the next best thing is I use my policy. And so it's the same thing. I added one extra step. Instead of a credit card, it's a policy. Instead of getting miles, I'm getting uninterrupted compound interest.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And whenever I hear infinite banking, some people go, I don't want to get involved in that. You know, almost like it's like a bad word or a scam or something like that, right? So how do I process this that, you know, the insurance company is not going to keep my money, or the insurance company can't lose my money, or at a bank, I've got an FDIC limit, right? It's 100K. But how do I know the insurance company is the right one? And, you know, is there a brokerage behind it? So maybe demystify some of that as well. So people go, oh, okay, I'm going to put it here. It is like a bank. Or in your mindset, you said some people can argue they're safer than a bank. Mm-hmm. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, great question, Abel. And that thought process is what everybody goes through. Right. I was going to say, I'll take you back to when I first came across banking, right? I was a business owner sitting on a bunch of cash, came across Nelson's book. I read it and I'm like, man, this is awesome. This is exactly what I'm looking for as a business owner. How come nobody told me about it? And I started asking colleagues and friends about it. And the moment that you say whole life insurance, Abel, you get a whole bunch of opinions, right? So everyone has an opinion on whole life insurance, and very few people actually have facts. What would happen is I would take this and I would say, hey, this is a great idea, right? Tell me why this isn't wrong. Well, whole life insurance is terrible. It sucks. Don't do it. And I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. That's your opinion. But in here, there's a whole bunch of illustrations that show me exactly how my money's going to grow and how I can borrow against it. What about that doesn't work? And they could never, they had no rebuttal, right? And so if you go down this road and you start to look at it, what I would recommend for all your listeners, right, all the passive investors and also the active ones that are out there that may have heard about this but aren't quite sure, is I would tell you to do your own research. Go out there, do your own research, look into it yourself, take the time to get into it, because as you go down that road, like I said, you get a whole bunch of opinions. And in regards to, hey, where can I put my money to make sure that it's going to be safe and liquid? Abel, I believe that this is kind of just assumed, right, at this point, is that banks are not the best place that somebody can keep cash. And the reason for that is if you look at the financial stability over banks and banking institutions over the last 20, 30 years, man, they've struggled. And one of the biggest reasons that banks at a local and national level struggle is because they practice a thing that's called fractional reserve banking. And what that means is that if I put a dollar, or if you put a dollar deposit at your local bank, is they then lend out maybe 10 times or more whatever you put in deposit. And so that puts them in an extremely leveraged position. And as long as the economy's fine and money's flowing and moving, there's zero issues with that. But the minute that the economy slows down or interest rates rise and the economy starts to tighten a little bit, man, banks are in a really, really bad spot. They have almost zero reserves. And so if you go back and you look at the number of bank failures over the years and you compare that with insurance companies, it is absolutely night and day, right? So banks will fail, you know, very quickly. And we've already seen that more recently just with the several banks that failed earlier this year. But if you compare that with insurance companies are the backbone of the economy. And if you look at the way that they operate, they're state regulated, but insurance companies are not able to practice that reserve banking. And so they sit on large, large amounts of capital, and they've got to put that money to work. So they're making investments, but they're not practicing that leverage piece. And so when you compare the financial stability to banks, like I said, it's night and day. If you go and you look at the failure of mutual insurance companies over the last 100, 150 years, there's nil, right? There are very, very few. And I said very few because I can only think of one that comes to mind that's actually failed, and that was because of poor management. But the way that these businesses, these insurance companies are set up is they are very boring. They're very consistent. They're very certain as far as the way that they're going to perform moving forward. And so when someone is looking at a place to keep capital, man, if you do a little bit of research, you're going to realize that the best place that you can keep your cash is with a mutual insurance company in a properly designed policy.
Got it. Yeah, for those that are trying to figure this stuff out more, I think the leverage part makes a lot of sense, because as a real estate, commercial real estate buyer, I am trying to leverage the bank's money, my loan to value. And I'm trying to put a 20%, you know, roughly speaking, 20% down payment, maybe 30, maybe a little more conservative. I go up to 40 or 50, but I'm still trying to buy a piece of commercial real estate property on leverage. Well, a lot of people forget the banks do that to a much higher degree. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what we're all operating on, is they give us money and we're using that leverage. But on the flip side, they're supported up to a certain, you know, regulation. What is the amount that they can lend out? What's the percentage of money that they need to hold? And what's the percentage of money that they can just basically make up? What is that percentage?
Great, great question. So back in 2008, right, when everything hit the fan, banks were actually leveraging, you put $1 in deposit, they were actually leveraging up to $30, $31 is what they're putting out there.
That's crazy. We put in one in the bank, and the bank would turn around and make it 33 and lend 33 out.
Right. Then what they did is they brought that down, right? Everything goes sideways. So they got a little bit more conservative and they got back down to that 1-10 ratio.
1-10.
Yeah. Guess where it's at now, Abel?
What is it?
edit out.
There's actually zero reserves. They have zero requirements on the ratio that they need to keep on hand.
So it's gone the other way. It's gone hard the other way.
It's gone the complete other way. In COVID, right, there was a regulation that was lifted that allowed banks really infinite leverage when it comes to deposits. I don't know about you, but that scares the absolute heck out of me, right? Yeah. As far as the exposure and leverage that these banks are carrying. So
put in a dollar, lend however many I think is right.
Exactly. However they feel, however much they feel they can lend out, which is absolutely insane to me.
I don't know. I don't think I realized that changed recently in COVID. I thought it was still at the 10, you know, put in a dollar and they can lend 10. I didn't know that was lifted.
We've got a couple articles that we'll send you, and maybe you can put them in the show notes that if anybody wants to read up on that, but we've got the documentation to back that up.
And so the mindset of, man, I've got this 100K, I'm worried, I'm, you know, concerned with, I don't know if I can trust this life insurance policy. That's kind of mitigated from, no, they don't leverage, they can't leverage because they're regulated by the state. Is that what you said?
Yeah, the state. And, you know, to me, like Cameron had mentioned, we're big on facts, not opinions.
Mm-hmm,
now,
mm-hmm.
Abel, do you know how many banks failed in 2008?
No.
499.
Yeah.
Okay. Cameron already gave you the answer, but you know how many mutual insurance companies failed during that time? Is zero.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, these are companies that have been around over 100 years.
Yeah.
Have been profitable every one of those 100 years, which means they were profitable during the Great Recession and during the Great Depression. So mm-hmm. our view is that if they were profitable during the worst time the world's ever seen, that they're best suited for whatever happens next.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Five Talents Podcast with me, your host, Abel Pacheco. And since you're listening to the show right now, I wanted to break for a moment to tell you thank you so much for subscribing and following the show. I also want to give you access to our Simple Wealth case study for busy professionals that we explain how we invested in $150 million of commercial real estate to generate passive income. So I'm sharing with you how I personally build wealth like the 1% and explaining how you can create passive income in real estate without having to manage it yourself. So do yourself a favor, take a moment now and go to www.5talents.capital. That's the number 5, talents, T-A-L-E-N-T-S, .capital. And you can register, watch our video recorded case study, and we're going to give you access to our investment club as well. If you want to see like all of our next moves, every single investment move that we make, future investment opportunities, and even perhaps invest alongside us, go to our website now. We look forward to sharing more. You can register at www.5talents.capital. And we look forward to having you as part of the club.
Let's dig a little deeper into like you all, how y'all can help someone become the bank. So let's say I'm interested. I'm ready to go. How do I know which is the right insurance policy, was the right company to put my money into? And is that what you end up doing? You'll help, you know, facilitate, or for lack of better words, a brokerage, like you help me find the right team or company. Walk me through this process, right?
Yeah. So somebody comes in, first thing that we're going to do, number one, is we're going to ask them a whole bunch of questions and make sure that what they're trying to achieve, their goals line up with kind of this process. Is just a side note, what I see oftentimes in personal finance, Abel, is people kind of go down this road and they just pick up accounts, meaning, right, this account sounds good because their accountant told them to put money in. This HSA sounds good because their brother-in-law told them to get it. And then they get down this road and they've got 14 accounts and they're not accomplishing anything, right? It's not lining up with what they're trying to get to. And so one of the things that we always tell somebody is, first and foremost, is you want to start with your goals, and then you back into whatever account is going to be best suited to help you get there. So real estate investors, entrepreneurs, I'll cut to the chase right now, is that most of their goals is creating cash flow, right? And creating investment opportunities for themselves. And so a properly designed policy is almost always the best account for them. But that is where you're going to start. If somebody comes in and they say, hey, you know, this is a good fit, What we're going to do, Abel, is exactly kind of what you just described a minute ago, is we're going to help them design a policy, and we're going to choose kind of what company is going to be a best fit for them. There's probably a dozen companies out there that fit the criteria that we're looking for. At the end of the day, there's probably four or five of them that you'd actually want to use for this. And there's really subtle differences between those, right? So they fit a general characteristic or criteria based upon somebody's specific situation. We'll make recommendations on which company is a better fit for them. And then also the design. So how do we get the cash value into the policy? And then secondarily, Abel, which is even more important, is what do we go do with it? Is we'll tell everybody, first and foremost, it's great. It's a good thing to have cash value inside of a policy. You've got the greatest amount of control that you have over any sort of account that's out there in comparison, but you've got the ability to collateralize and leverage that. And now we've got to figure out how to go put those dollars to work. And so that's part of the education process as well, is what's your skill set? What are you good at? What have you had success with? And let's go kind of invest in what we know is typically our mantra.
All right. All right.
Yeah. Hope that helps.
And, well, what I will add is we're not selly. We're not, you know, the slick insurance guys people might be thinking about. We're big on education. We take people through our education process, and we do have an online course, and we're going to give your listeners a link to get free access to that. We normally charge, I don't know if it's $500, but
500,000.
Yeah, it's worth 500,000.
Just kidding.
But we're going to give your listeners, if somebody wants to learn, we're going to give them free access to learn, and we're not going to bug them. We're not going to chase them. Our goal is, you should, if you're a real estate investor, you need to look at the facts on infinite banking. Maybe it's for you, maybe it's not, right? It is not for everybody, but we have, what we like to say is that we do the math. Because probably, I imagine some of your investors are like, you know, I hear whole life's terrible. Maybe I don't need the death benefit. I just want to go out and buy real estate. Well, we're going to do a case study, and we're, as part of our education process, and we do have this recorded in the course, where we're going to buy an asset, saving up money in a bank account and withdrawing it and buying it. Then we're going to use the same dollars going in, same dollars going out, but instead of storing them at a bank, we're going to store them in an IBC policy. And then that, to me, is when the light bulb went off. I'm a recovering CPA. I'm very analytical and skeptical. Like, you can show me a cool graph or a cool PowerPoint. I need to see the math. I need to know that if I do this, do infinite banking or versus something else, that my family is going to be better off. And so that is one of the many things you will learn in the course.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Well, let's use this as an opportunity now. So if somebody's interested in hearing more, learning more, reaching out to you all, where do we go? Who do we contact? You know, website, link, whatever you want. Let's put that in the show now.
Yeah, they can go to infinitewealthconsultants.com. That's going to be our website. We've got all the introductory stuff there. We got links to our social media and everything. But more specifically, the link that Anthony was referencing was, if they go to infinitewealthconsultants.com/5, mm-hmm, 5 Talents Podcast, that'll take them to the landing page. It'll give them free access into the course. And so that's just a kind of a thank you for having us on and for these guys listening. Like Anthony said, they go in there, find a whole bunch of education, and somebody can figure out pretty quickly if it's for them or not. But great place to go.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That's that's really good. I think anybody that wants to learn more, you have to educate yourself, whether it's a yay or a nay at the end. I think the important part is you do the due diligence yourself. I really like what you said about, you know, everybody's got an opinion. Man, I hear that all the time. Plenty of opinions. And then the hard part is I'm listening to, and then I'm trying to weed out my nugget. And then, you know, really I have to kind of temper everything with, well, are you doing that yourself? Are you doing that? You know, are you making this investment? Are you pulling the trigger? Have you done that? And a lot of times those opinions are, oh, well, no, I've never done that. Either way, I'm like, well, shoot, I want to talk to somebody that's in the game. Yeah. You know, if I want to take advice, I want to know somebody's in the arena. They're doing it themselves. Or if they chose not to, why not? and where what they ended up moving forward with, right? What was it? Oh, I ended up doing this. Okay, well, that's, you know, good time-tested, you know, area of advice to kind of weed through. So yes, get the knowledge. Got to educate yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. So, you know, I forgot to ask, how did you guys end up, you know, working together? How long have y'all been working together and all that stuff? Like, I just forgot to ask a little bit of background. I got excited. I jumped right into it, man.
Yeah, we started at the same firm. I started like the day before Cameron did.
He did not.
And I saw this young buck with a lot of talent, but a lot of green. He still had good hair, though. Took him under my wing. And we got into this business at the same time, and we just really hit it off. Same values, same faith, kind of. Family is important, entrepreneur, very independent people. And we just hit it off and we were friends. And then we eventually wanted our own company, had our own vision and wanted to do our own things. So we branched off and merged together. I'm still doing mentoring for Cameron after all this time, but it's part of my talents is to mentor people. So Cameron's right here.
Hey, well, I got started briefly. Is my wife and I are buying our house, and I tell everybody this, by the grace of God, I asked our broker if he had a good book for a young couple, and he handed me Nelson's book. And he goes, if I would have read this at your age, it would have been the difference of millions of dollars. And I went home and I read that book, and I was pissed off, to be honest.
Yeah, it resonates with everyone who read Rich Dad, Poor Dad for the first time. They're like, ah, fudge.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Man. I'm very thankful that I was 27, 28 when I came across it, because I didn't have, you know, I was still before my big earning years and everything else. But man, I was mad because I felt like I'd been told the wrong things about personal finance. And so it did help me rethink the approach that I took. And so that is really how I got into this, is I got introduced to that idea. I pursued it just personally down that road. And then, as I alluded to before, is I just started sharing this strategy with other business owners that I knew. And then they started asking me questions on how I was implementing it. And you just kind of become a resource, and you kind of fall into it. I don't know if anybody sets out to be kind of an IBC guy originally, but you know, you're an entrepreneur and it works out really well.
That's good. That's awesome. Yep. Well, that's good stuff, man. And ultimately, we're trying to figure out the right things to do. Maybe you can give everyone a little bit of the mindset, paradigm shift, action taking kind of advice, because no matter if it's an infinite banking strategy, a real estate strategy, or a combined mixture of the two, some part of investing is like, it's just how to overcome the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the very issue to like take the risk in the first place. You know, any advice or insight or wisdom you can give? I'm sure you've talked to a lot of clients that are probably just, maybe this is their first investment, or how do I get over that hump to like even invest in whatever it is to make the move?
I would say a few things. One, get educated. You need to learn what you are investing in, what and why. Then you need to take action, right? That's the hardest part. And I've never jumped off a plane or parachuted, but one guy told me, you're scared going up in the plane. And then as you're getting the parachute on, as your number's called, you have all this fear and anxiety of what is about to happen. But once you jump off, again, I'm taking their word for it because I haven't done it. But once you take off, a lot of that fear is going to go away. You're doing it and you're enjoying the moment. So I would tell people, take action and think long term. Whatever your first deal is, maybe anticipate it's not going to go as planned, but you're going to get that education and experience. So when you do your next deal, you're going to be better prepared, and then the next deal and better prepared. But our life is long and it's going to go quick. So let's be long-term focused in our investing.
Abel, what I would say is that my advice would be that nobody's going to do it for you. And I think that that's the message that has really been told to everybody in that personal finance space for a really long time. It's, you're not smart enough to do this on your own. Give me your money and let me manage it for you. Mm-hmm. That is not the way to do anything in life, right? Is to hand it over to somebody. You will not be successful outsourcing anything in that regard, especially personal finance. And so one of the things that I would tell people is nobody's here to do it for you. I'm not here to do it for you. Anthony's not here to do it for you, right? We will absolutely lay out the steps that will help you be successful. But man, this is just a tool to get you to where you want to go.
Agreed.
Well, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I feel pretty passionate about that one. Yeah.
It was a good moment. It's pretty you're pretty thoughtful. Like you, I agree, man. As you were saying that, I was thinking about working out and getting healthy. And something my sister told me a long time ago. She goes, "Oh yeah, trying to get healthy, work out a little bit. Yeah, lose a little weight." Mm-hmm. She goes, "Don't overcomplicate it, because all you need to do is move around a little bit more and eat a little bit less." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Fudge, that's it. You know, yeah. Move around a little bit more." I need a little bit less.
Abel, have you ever heard of the book, The Compound Effect?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Well, when he talks about, you know, the whole compound effect is just making small, smart, consistent decisions, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes in there with the compound effect of eating, just like you said, moving a little bit more, eating a little bit less. First couple of days or a couple of weeks, you're not going to see much, but that will compound. And it's just really just being smart and consistent and always moving forward.
Yep. Go ahead.
I was just going to add to it is one of the things that I often tell clients as we're talking to them and I'm introducing them to the strategy is it's just like working out, right? This is simple, but it's not easy.
Yeah, for sure. On the no one's going to do it yourself part, it also, you know, makes me think about Social Security and the timeline. It feels like every time I hear an update, it's now shorter and shorter. And then I think it's like a very definite timeline now, where I think when I was younger, I heard that it may not even be there in the future. And now I think there's definite timelines on when it's going to run out of money. And I think the last time I heard it, I was like shocking. It felt like 10 years from now or something. Mm-hmm. Holy moly. Well, hopefully my parents get a little bit of theirs, but no one's going to do it for you, not even our Social Security tax, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it won't be there. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for the time. Really appreciate it. Piqued some interest for sure. We're excited about, you know, learning more. We dropped the links in the show notes, right? You guys told everyone where to reach you? I can't remember.
We did, right? InfiniteWealthConsultants.com/5, the number 5, 5 Talents Podcast. That'll take him to the landing page.
Perfect. I just wanted to make sure we got that in there. And so appreciate your time. And, you know, before we go, any last, you know, thoughts, words of wisdom, anything we didn't talk about, you were hoping I asked, we just didn't get to, feel free.
Words of advice. One of the things that my favorite things to tell people is that in our industry, words are often kind of misused. They're used in certain situations that doesn't apply, but oftentimes people will use saving, investing, and speculating interchangeably. And they mean drastically different. They have drastically different meanings. And so if you're going down this road, make sure you understand the difference, right? Saving, in our opinion, is the act of saving, is putting money away, right? Is a verb, right? Investing, there's a level of due diligence that needs to take place before you invest. Mm-hmm. So you got to do research on the investment. There's an education process. There's a due diligence on maybe the partners that are managing this. And then also on the speculation piece, speculation is just throwing your money at something and hoping and praying that it's going to work out for you. And a lot of times people are misled because those words are used interchangeably. And so when you bring that to someone's attention, hopefully that sticks with one or two of your listeners and they start to realize that they don't mean the same thing. And you can start to identify some opportunities or some mistakes that most people make just simply because of that.
Agreed. Agreed. You know, thank you.
What I would add when somebody would have said whole life, I would have said, forget about it. Like high commissions, low cash value. What I would give somebody advice, all the things that you think about whole life insurance, put that aside. Come to it at an open mind. The way we design this policy is very different. I say, this ain't your mama's whole life policy. This is a very different policy designed for it to get as much cash value there as possible. So you can turn around, leverage that and buy your syndication or whatever your asset of choice is. So just look at this with an open mind.
Makes perfect sense. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Anthony Cameron, it's a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you very much for providing a little bit of education, something for our listeners as well. And for everyone else, thank you all for your time. The continued downloads, the views, the resources, all the good stuff. Happy to share with you all and look forward to seeing you on the next show. Thanks.
Thanks, Abel.
Go make it a fantastic day.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Five Talents Podcast with myself, your host, Abel Pacheco. We really appreciate you liking, following, subscribing, and leaving all the written reviews for the Five Talents Podcast. Each week, we're going to continue to bring interviews with private equity folks, VCs, advisors, financial planners, strategists, tax strategists, and other stewards of capital, many of which advise the wealthiest 1% on what to do with their money. So we appreciate you joining. Also, if you want to be notified of monthly future events we're hosting or attending, and if you want exclusive access to the same investment opportunities that have largely been reserved for the wealthiest 1%, many of which you've rarely ever heard about, go now to our website, watch our wealth building case study, and register to be added to our investment club. We're going to send you future opportunities, and you'll be able to watch all the moves that we make firsthand. Your investment journey is waiting for you to take the next step. So what is the next step? Go to www.5talents.capital. That's 5talents.capital, and register today. Thank you again. We can't wait to bring you the next show. And thank you for liking and subscribing.